This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Trackhall Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hi, everybody. Jeremy Scott here. Charlie Ante, our driver analyst, will join us here in just a little bit. Got a busy show for you today. Mike Marini will be joining us here shortly. We'll talk about the quote-unquote season opener of Formula Race Promotions. It's the second race weekend of the year for the series. Their Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, over 100 cars have been entered for this weekend's competition. We'll talk more about that also. So a little bit on the Indy Lights team that Mike does public relations for. Also, Charlie will join us immediately after. We'll wrap up the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. His thoughts and impressions. Then after that, F1600 champion Simon Sykes returns to the category this weekend for Rice Race Prep. We talk about that and his USF 2000 aspirations and what else he did during the St. Petersburg weekend. Then Charlie comes back, we talk Road to Indy, and we do all sorts of fun stuff at the end of the show. So to get in touch with us, 815-714-9260, that is our voicemail, and really, you can call us anytime, ask us a question. Your question may be featured on a future show. You can get in touch with us by email, insideopenwheel@gmail.com, by Facebook or Twitter, just search Inside Open Wheel. And also want to let you know that we have a brand new sponsor that we want to thank. Trackside Online joins us starting this weekend as the official content provider of Inside Open Wheel. Make sure you head over there. $22 a year gets you 12-month subscription to some of the best news within the Road to Indy and Indy Car Paddock. But coming up after this, a quick break, Mike Marini talks Formula Race Promotions next.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, the series has gotten their first race weekend out of the way, but this is the, as the series owner told me, the first big race weekend. So this is where we're going to start our concentration. It's Formula Race Promotions weekend over at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. Joining me, as always, is Mike Marini. Mike, I know you had a busy weekend at St. Pete. We'll talk a little bit about that, but going to have another one this weekend with over 100 cars entered for this weekend. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, the first race at Carolina Motorsports Park was over the Easter weekend, and I think the anticipation was that it was going to be smaller than expected or smaller than normal, but heading into Mid-Ohio, obviously the series is now in full swing, and to have over 100 cars entered is great, and across five or six classes total. I know the F1600 class is the one that I'm most looking forward to. It always provides some of the best and closest racing, and I think there's 25 or 26 entered now.
Yeah, I know the Motorsport Reg, which is run by Hagerty, it's a little bit behind, but nonetheless, I've got to say the list of drivers who are there. Obviously, you got Will Holtz, Kometchis, Hugh Esterson, Nicholas Di Orlando, but one entry that kind of surprised me a little bit when I saw it was defending series champion Simon Sykes.
Yeah, I mean, I personally really don't know much about his entry and what he's coming back to prove and why he's coming back to prove it. I know he's obviously the defending champion, won a lot of races last year. I know the team that he competed with last season has a car open for guest drivers or past alumni of the program. So it's good to see his name on the list, and he obviously brings he increases the level of competition straight off the bat just by having his name there.
Especially since it was a competitive weekend at Carolina Motorsports Park with Nicholas Di Orlando leading a good portion of it, ended up in an incident in race one, Kometchis with the win there. And then Di Orlando took the second two wins, but neither of those two are leading the points. It's Jonathan Lee with a string of second, second, and sixth across the three races.
Yeah, I mean, that's just perfect perfect proof that being consistent is what wins championships. You can't win the race in the first corner, or you can definitely lose it. And the same thing goes for championships as well. If you, I know of drivers that have never won a race, but they've been consistently in the top five. While a couple of the race winners have had some issues and they've managed to walk away with the championship. So I think he's sitting in a good position. I mean, Axe set the new track record at Carolina Motorsports Park. I think during the first race, the only driver to go under a certain time, and he was the only one to do it all weekend. So I think the speed for him is there. I think with a little bit more consistency, he'll be a championship hopeful. I think Simon coming in, he's going to challenge both those. At Hugh Esterson, I mean, the names on that list are the future stars of motorsports, and I think they'll just continue to push each other.
Yeah, it's exciting to see what can happen this weekend at Mid-Ohio. Moving over to F2000, that's another big list. You have Brandon Dixon entered, Dave Wenzelhoff, obviously Bob Wright's in there as well, Trent Walko. But another interesting name I saw in there that kind of made me blink a little bit is Mike Verison's coming from, for those who don't know, he's the Formula V standout, decided to make his jump into F2000. And I think this is Michael's first pro weekend.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly on if it's first or second, but I mean, he's going to have his hands full no matter what with Brandon. Brandon Dixon, that is. Sorry, he's a multi-time champion, multi-time race winner. Just always seems to be in contention no matter where the race is, what conditions are. Sometimes, I mean, I've seen that guy, he can wheel a car pretty good. So definitely the competition in that class is growing, and it's good to see maybe Brandon will finish second or third a couple times this weekend.
As I say, he did take a win in race one, and Reese Everard takes the win in race two. So your top 4 points, actually, that's kind of how they finished the first race at Carolina Motorsports Park. But the field size triples, so I think it's going to be a little bit more exciting, especially with their own race this weekend.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm not sure if Reese's name is on the entry list at the currently, but if he does decide to come to Mid-Ohio, and he is he will be a contender, that's for sure. I mean, he really impressed and turned a lot of heads at Carolina Motorsports Park. I think with at Mid-Ohio, there's some track knowledge there as well, so I would put him down as a potential winner as well.
A couple of series getting their season start this weekend at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. One of them is the Atlantic Championship, and quite anticipated, especially since now there's an open spec and restricted spec. We've talked about it. What more do you know about the new open restricted spec?
I know one class is called the open spec and one class is called the restricted spec. That's pretty much all I know. I leave the rulemaking and the rule processing and all that kind of stuff to certain people that are in the series. That's above my pay grade. I just make sure that we can promote it the best we can after the weekend. So, but it'll be good to see. I mean, it's always nice to see new classes that provide more opportunity for maybe different cars that are hidden in garages throughout the country or throughout the Midwest, especially to possibly come out. And obviously Mid-Ohio, the track is a big draw. It's one of the famed tracks in North America. So, to offer more classes, different classes, and maybe pull some people to the event is always a welcome idea.
And you have names that are known throughout the Atlanta, at least the Atlanta class, Hans Petter, Rich Zober, and Dudley Fleck in there. So, and they're all in Swift 016s in the open spec. You have a couple in the restricted spec, which is Bob Corliss and Charlie Petter. This is going to be, I think, I'm excited to see the open spec and see what they can do around Mid-Ohio.
Yeah, I mean, if the name of the class is anything that I'm thinking, I mean, open is typically faster. The drivers that are in the class, obviously I have experience. It's not like you have a bunch of rookies out there running around that are going to cause caution flag or yellow flag periods. FRP has always been a program that provides the best bang for your buck and the most green flag racing. So I'm anticipating nothing less this weekend. I think F1600 class, I mean, I know the class is big. I know there's different skill sets in there, but I think the way that those guys race and the way that they're conducted to race, They're definitely gaining experience with each and every lap, and I think you'll see that across every class.
That's the voice of Mike Marini from Formula Race Promotions, talking about Mid-Ohio this weekend over at for the FRP series on Inside Open Wheel. A new series starting this weekend is the Eastern Pro 4 Challenge, which basically is the F4 cars that we see in the FIA F4 series, but younger drivers can come in and kind of get their feet wet in the series.
Yeah, it's actually the first event was, or the first class was first offered at Carolina, but there was just with the Easter weekend and other things that were going on within the industry at that time, it was difficult to get some people there. I know the national championship has an event there later in the year, I believe. So it's a good way to get some drivers out to Mid-Ohio in advance for some testing, some on-track action, some real racing action. I mean, anybody can go out and test and do fast laps or do laps anywhere, but to actually get wheel-to-wheel experience and race starts and conserving tires and all that kind of stuff is you rarely have the opportunity to do that. But FRP offers this class. It's an affordable program. It's the current Ligier JS F4 car. The only difference that I know of is the tires. You obviously have to run the Hoosier tires that are the spec for the FRP series, but to get on the track, learn the track. I mean, I know of people that are going to certain places and running spec Miatas and Mazda Miatas and F1600 cars. But this is a true opportunity to run the exact same car that you may race later in the year at the National Series with just a different tire on it.
And Eric Jensen bringing three of his drivers, Oscar Afar, Jake Bonilla, and Max Parker. Hayden Bowlesby also joining. And I believe this is going to be Christian Weir. No, it's not going to be Christian Weir's pro car debut because he ran in the Lucas Oil Series. But five cars, really not too bad for Mid-Ohio.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I know it's race week now, but I think I actually spoke to somebody this morning who's talking about possibly going there with another car, another two cars. So I think you could see that entry list get a little bit larger as the weekend approaches. I know the competition will be tough always. It's always tough no matter what you're doing in racing. So, but it'd be good to see, you know, if you get that up to six or seven or eight cars this weekend and then maybe grow that the following weekend. I know that the idea of the class is to provide an affordable program for somebody to run in the future. I think the class will grow into 2022 and 2023. And with whatever may happen with the current Ligier cars, if a halo is going to be required or if there's an upgrade kit, I think this is the perfect opportunity for car owners, team owners that don't want to maybe bear that expense. This could be the perfect opportunity for them to continue racing with the current model car that they have.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. If you're in the area, Mike, do you know if fans are allowed to spectate?
They are. They're same as always right now. Social distancing, masks must be worn, follow the CDC guidelines. But anybody that wants to go watch can. All you got to do is show up at the gate, sign the waiver. There is a small entry fee to the property. But that was it. Yeah. And everybody can go and watch.
And if you're not, then we'll watch it on timing and scoring. All right, real quick. You were also at St. Petersburg, and I've got to say your Indy Lights drivers in the HMD GRG paddock are looking really good this year.
Yeah. I mean, it's, the program's really come together. Obviously Andretti Autosport has been the benchmark of the program for the previous 2 years. And before that it was, Junkos Racing. So, just working with the guys there to try and at least match the benchmark. The team has grown tremendously. There's four drivers with David Malukas, Linus Lundqvist, Benjamin Pettersson, and Nikita Lastochkin. So leading the team championship right now, sitting first, second, and sixth in the drivers' championship. I know the season's still young. You've only had four races, but things are going in a positive direction. And there's really no egos within the team, no big heads, when Linus won in Barber, David was the first one there to congratulate him, and vice versa this past weekend at St. Pete. So it's definitely a family affair under the tent, but it's definitely a serious family affair that that almost demands winning.
I just love how at Barber Motorsports Park, everybody's like, well, we don't know how Linus is going to do. And some of us who were watching him last year, like, we know how he's going to do.
Yeah, I was interviewed by Rob Howden on IndyCar Radio this past weekend, and he asked me, what's one word that you can use to describe Linus? And I said, impressive. Mm-hmm. Just everything that he does, he prepares, he's ready. I mean, when he's at the track, he's low key, doesn't talk much, put his helmet on, and he's a different animal. But yeah, going to the street race, you would expect him to be a little bit behind, and yeah, okay, maybe there were some issues in qualifying to begin with, but I don't think it was a lack of speed issue. It was a traffic issue. But once we got into racing, and obviously in race two, he started, I believe, sixth or seventh. By the end of the first corner, he was fourth. By the end of the race, he was on the podium, and that's what it takes to win championships.
Mike Marini, thanks for joining us. Have fun this weekend at Mid-Ohio. It's been a while since I've been out there. I need to get back out there soon.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite places for sure. Just wish I had a motorhome so I can never leave.
I get it. Mike Marini, thanks for joining us. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, it's time to wrap up the weekend that was at St. Petersburg.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
All right, it's time for the race recap. Charlie Ante joins us, our driver analyst. And, Charlie, it's a big weekend this weekend at Mid-Ohio for FRP. Over 100 cars. And I want to get your thoughts on that, first of all, because I know that's a series that's near and dear to your heart.
Well, I guess it's across several different series. So it's not like there's 100 Formula Fords. Like,
I know that, but awesome. Still. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I don't honestly know if that's a lot. Like, I don't know how many there are on a normal weekend, but it sounds good. Hopefully it means that things are coming back.
Yep. That's huge. So 20 plus, Formula Fords, 4600s, I should say. And that's just in the championship division. So that's some good news there as well.
That is great. Yeah, that's really good.
We'll also,
hopefully at the next race, it'll be 21.
We'll also have defending series champion Simon Sykes here in just a little bit. Now on to the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg race wrap-up. We have our notes from Trackside Online. I've got to say, St. Pete lived up to the hype, as it normally does. But it's like I told our friend Tony DeZino after the race Sunday, I got spoiled by the Road to Indy races because I thought that if I had to choose between the Road to Indy races and the IndyCar race this weekend, I would have chosen the Road to Indy races all day long. Those are fantastic races. We'll talk more about those later as well. But, you know, if I didn't watch the Indy Lights and all those races, okay, that's fine. They would have been great. But, yeah.
I think that the St. Pete race wasn't quite as dramatic as the race at Barber. It was still really good. I think the biggest suspense was maybe like 10 to 15 laps from the end when Newgarden's reds hadn't worn out yet. And you're like, oh, maybe he's going to be able to make a charge for it. But once you kind of got past the prime lifespan of the red tires, Newgarden didn't really have much of a chance.
So 24 cars were set to run for the race on Sunday. And 23 of the 24 cars started. The 14th Sebastian Bourdais had some issues, couldn't get the car started, but they did get started before the first pace lap was complete. They also had to switch the radio out, so that was one bit of drama for the 14 Rokit AJ Foyt Racing entry. Here's what
14
was
what?
Is it Rokit or Rokit?
I assume it's Rokit. It's spelled like Rokit, so I don't
all right, so
see any reason to pronounce it otherwise.
All right, so let's find this out. Rokit. Okay, here we go. We'll figure this out and in the commercial break. We'll get it back to you after our interview with Simon Sykes. But green flag goes out. Half the field was on reds, half the field on blacks, which I thought were interesting. Normally we see, you know, the field go almost straight blacks or straight reds, but kind of interesting to see the field mix. But I guess that they were having some issues as well with the tire parity between the two compounds, which we'll find out more about those later in the season. Green flag comes out. Normally, turn one is a cluster. This time, it actually wasn't. The only problem was Bourdais having problems. He bounced off a pair of Penske cars, Newgarden and Pagano, and had a hole in the nose there to start off the race. So not a good start for the St. Petersburg resident.
Indeed.
Oh, excuse me.
Not a good start at all.
No, not a good start. So most of the early part of the race ran practically trouble-free. Colton Herta ran away from the pole three laps in. He was 1.5 seconds over Jack Harvey. Rossi moved up from 11th to 8th in those three laps. First bit of problem was on lap 16, where Jimmy Johnson ended up in the tire barriers off turn 13, locked it up going into the hairpin, coming onto the front straightaway. Couldn't get it in reverse. Now, we've talked on the show that Jimmy Johnson's going to have problems like this. What I'm surprised at is why race control let him sit there for so long.
I guess they didn't expect, they expected him to figure it out.
Right.
Quicker than he did.
But
that's probably why they left him there.
What was it, 3-4 laps before they threw the full course yellow?
Yeah, it was quite a while, yeah.
That's what I'm surprised with. I would have been like, okay, just one lap. Because as you and I know, that is a big impact zone right there, turn 13, 14.
Well, it could be, yeah.
Well, anytime a car can get anywhere, it's an impact zone. Full course yellow came out not too long after that. The AMR safety team got him turned around. He was 5 laps down after that, so it may have been 5 laps that he was under the gun. But anyway, pit stops begin. Race restart lap 21. Bourdais took VK to the inside, locked up, held the position. And then here's the interesting part of the race. Lap 22, Hinchcliffe and Sato side-by-side contact into turn one. You saw that incident, correct?
Yes.
Okay. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, without just going from memory, I would probably have a better analysis if I saw a replay. But, I mean, I think that Sato was alongside or close enough alongside, and
yeah,
and Hinch should have given him room.
I agree. And that's the thing. You know, Hinch left the door too open. And then, you know, kind of like with Wickens and Rossi back in 2018, you know, Wickens decided, oh, no, I left the door open. And, you know, thankfully, both cars are able to get ahead. But a lot of blame towards Sato. And I've got to say this, you know, early on in his IndyCar career, this is just how people in this area of the country are. They, you know, a couple things happen early on and they don't forget. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They need to let it go. Sato is a much different driver than he was when he came over and raced with Team Lotus. Enough. He's won 2 Indy 500s, much more than James Hinchcliffe has. Sorry. You know, they have the same wins, but I'm sorry, the 2 Indy 500 wins carry a little bit more weight.
And you know what? Even if he has matured a little bit, I mean, Sato's aggressiveness is kind of what makes him fun to watch. Mm. So,
exactly. And that's why I loved watching him when he was in Formula One. He was great. He was super aggressive then. He has not changed since he has come from Formula One to IndyCar. So, you know, if you can't handle it, oh, well, you know, if this is going to be a storyline of, oh, Sato and, you know, James Hinchcliffe, well, somebody's got to put their big boy pants on and realize that that's how one person's going to race. And I have no problem with James Hinchcliffe.
It's kind of the other thing with another incident that Sato was involved in. He was on the other end of this time, was I think 2 years ago at Road America when Rossi ran him off the road.
I remember that because I was sitting there. I saw it. Yes.
Yeah, and everyone was like, oh, that was just hard racing, you know. He was just pushing it to, like, no, he ran him off. Rossi ran Sato off the road.
Yeah, ran him off at turn 6. You could see the steering wheel go right.
He knew he was there. He knew he was alongside. You have to give him room. You can't just push the guy off the track.
You know, I don't know if IndyCar has that 50% rule that a lot of these racing series have. I would imagine so, but Sato is more than 50%. He was past that 50% line. There's no reason why Hinchcliffe didn't see him. He was either, he either had tunnel vision there, or he saw him and wanted to close the door on him. And, oh, I got Sato'd. What? Come on, James, you're better than that.
Yeah, it seemed like a legit move to me. So, I said, I probably have a more confident analysis if I saw the replay.
We'll get the replay for you, and we'll talk about it a little bit later on. But I'm wondering if it's just frustration with all the Hinchcliffe hype, and he's just not living up to it. And one wrong thing goes, well, oh, it's the protagonist. I've got to blame Sato. And I like.
Well, this is this is his first year with Andretti. Is that right?
His first full season, but he had a bad race at Barber, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
So, and look, I have no ill will between those two drivers. It was a smart pass on Sato's part, and poor sportsmanship for Hinchcliffe to sit there and say, "Well, it was Sato's fault. I got Sato'd," and then going to social media. With a picture of your car and say Sato'd in all caps. Come on. That's NASCAR BS. You're better than that, well, James.
But how do you really feel, Jeremy?
I guess I'm just tired. It's not just St. James Hinchcliffe. It's across the motorsports world. If somebody makes a good move, they feel boned about it. They've got to blame, oh, it's the other driver. No, man up and say, okay, yeah, I got passed. So what? It is what it is. We'll just do better the next race. Thankfully, this weekend's a doubleheader, so you have two times to screw up, really.
Or, maybe only once if you screw up bad enough in the first race.
Oh. Remember, that's Charlie that said that, not me.
That's just fact of having two races on an oval.
Yeah.
The wall in the first race, it's going to be, you don't have much time to fix it.
One lap later, Romain Grosjean told the Dale Coyne crew he was having issues with his steering. And we can tell you why he has issues with his steering. He tapped the wall three times on the same lap. Must have been Grosjean's instincts to crash. Oh, wait.
They obviously do street courses in Formula One,
right.
But aside from Monaco, the street courses that Formula One goes to are very different from the street courses we have in North America.
I was going to say, and the two places that we saw Grosjean tap the wall are places where drivers tap the wall anyway, the exit of turn 10 and the exit of turn 14. So I don't know where the third place was. I didn't see it. But I've got to say this. You've got to give a huge round of applause to Romain Grosjean for coming in and just going 10 tenths right away. He's really proved that he can last in IndyCar. And I'm here for it.
Yeah, it's I've said a lot about how it's going to be interesting to see how Jimmy Johnson adapts, but I think that Grosjean has jumped in with both feet, and he's by the end of the season, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Especially with Dale Coyne equipment. Lap 37, Ray Hall. This is the big Ray Hall-Rossi incident. Ray Hall made contact with Alexander Rossi coming out of the pits in turn four. And because of that, Rossi had a flat on the right front, which caused Rossi to hit Ray Hall again. They hit the wall in turn five. Race control called that a racing incident. I kind of agree. But this goes back to the Hinchcliffe thing. I think Ray Hall was a little too aggressive on Rossi there in turn four. I understand he had to make the pass, okay?
Yeah, so I think the issue that Hinchcliffe was trying to force in his incident was present in this one.
Right,
I think that Ray Hall was too far back to make the move. Maybe Rossi braked harder or sooner than he expected,
mm-hmm.
Or something like that.
Well, Rossi just came out of the pits that lap. So he had colder tires than Ray Hall.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that could have been it.
So Ray Hall smelled blood in the water. But the difference is Ray Hall and Rossi were mature enough to say, racing incident, whatever, it happens.
Yeah. I think I was kind of laughing when I saw that accident just because it was kind of slow and pathetic.
Yeah, it was.
Also, because clearly, I don't think Ray Hall realized that Rossi's tire was down. So he kept the wheel turning thinking that Rossi was going to turn to get back online. And he's just he drove into him three times at low speed.
Yeah.
He was like, dude, there's a car there and it's not moving.
Yeah. You can't move it. Almost, what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the incident with Marco Andretti last year at that same turn.
I think I missed that race. So I'm not Okay. Familiar with the event?
I'll have to dig that one up. So Full Course Yellow, does the Full Course Yellow come out? No, it doesn't, because the Full Course Yellow comes out a couple laps later because Jimmy Johnson spun in turn three, which, to in all intents and purposes, is a very tough turn. Look at what happened to Alexander Rossi last year. He spun out from the lead there.
Yeah, I think, cause did Johnson spin coming out of the pits on cold tires, or was it later?
No, it was later. So he spun, spun coming out of turn three, made some slight contact with the concrete barrier, was able to get it going again, but just in time for Oriel Servia to bring the safety car around.
Yeah, that turn three, I mean, I think in the lower series, it's easy flat. It's kind of a non-event, but it looks like in the Indy cars, because like you said, we've seen a lot of drivers. I remember, I think Charlie Kimball understeered into the wall on cold tires once. So it must be one of those weird corners where it's like, if you get the line right, it's easy flat. But if you're just a little bit offline or you've got cold tires, it can be really sketchy.
Well, what's interesting about turn three there too is, you know, it's a slight right-hander, but once you get to your track out point, you also have a little bit of concrete patch that you got to maneuver around too, at least in the Indy cars.
Yeah, because they're always swerving back over to the right. Yeah, I think that's probably something that the city should probably get on top of for next year.
So, race comes back to green on lap 76, lap 80. Ed Jones makes a late move on the inside of James Hinchcliffe in turn four. Two made contact, and no word on if James Hinchcliffe said he was Jonesed there in turn four.
You know what? Ed Jones and Jack Harvey, God bless them. Yeah. I would not be able to pick them out of a lineup.
I could. It's...
I for some reason, they just kind of like, they don't register with me.
Fair enough.
Like in Motorsport Manager, there's like the drivers have like marketability ratings. And so for me, Ed Jones and Jack Harvey, like I'm sure they're good drivers. I mean, Jack Harvey's had some pretty good results, especially, but they have zero marketability for me.
Okay. Fair enough. I could see that. I mean, yeah. Restart came in lap 83. Ed Jones was two laps down, by the way, as a result of that spin. And this is where the strategy got interesting, because 11 laps to go, Herta had 53 seconds to push to pass left. Newgarden, 74. Newgarden tried to close in, but the Reds fell off, and Colton Herta was able to win yet again. Colton Herta, your winner. Joseph Newgarden second. Simon Pagenaud rounds out the podium. Jack Harvey fourth. Scott Dixon in fifth. Takuma Sato somehow crashed his way into sixth. I mean, drove his way to sixth. Marcus Ericsson seventh. Will Power eighth. Rins VK with a nice showing in ninth. And tenth goes to Sebastian Bourdais, which was interesting because he said he felt the car had a little bit more. Oh my, if that's the case, that 14 car is going to be a dark horse for a lot of races this year.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of my takeaways from the last 10 laps or so from Herta is I think that this, you know, the broadcast team was making a big deal about how chill he is and his dad is. I think we're going to be hearing a lot more of that this season.
And there's something else we're going to be hearing a lot more of this season, too, and we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. But right now, we're going to take a quick break. Simon Sykes joins us next to talk about F1600 this weekend at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. When getting the real story in the Road to Indy or IndyCar paddocks, more people trust Trackside Online, presented by Honda Racing, than any other site. With the top stories, race previews, and features you won't get anywhere else, it's the place to get news for IndyCar fans like yourself. Just $22 gets you insight and analysis from some of the best writers in the series. Visit TracksideOnline.com today for your subscription. That's TracksideOnline.com.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, Charlie comes back in just a little bit. We'll talk more about the fantastic Road to Indy races. One of the drivers that will be running later this season joins us now. He is the defending 1600 champion for the F1600 championship from last season. And I've got to tell you, when I saw his name on the entry list, as you heard earlier with Mike Marini, I was excited, especially since he's with his old team, I should say. Simon Sykes joins us on Inside Open Wheel. Dude, you're going back to your roots this weekend.
First of all, thanks for having me, and I'm definitely excited. I always love the F1600 racing. It really is a league of its own. The racing's incredible, and thankful for the opportunity to get back in one of those cars. It'll be a good one.
How hard did Greg Rice kind of twist your arm to get back in the seat?
We've been working together. We never stopped really working together. Even after last season, you see a lot of drivers move on, but we built a strong relationship. So I was able to come coach for the first weekend of the F1600 championship at CMP. And I still had some leftover credits from last year, which made it really easy to just jump in the car this weekend.
I was going to say, because you also ran, I think, an F2000 earlier this season for an SCCA national race. So you're still getting seat time, which is a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're planning on doing the runoffs in both classes again this year, both in the FC and FF, which is going to be a lot of fun alongside the Road to Indy.
I was going to say, you get your first taste of that racetrack here in a couple of weeks. We'll talk more about that, but I want to talk about your F1600. You saw the competition at CMP. I want to get your thoughts on that first, because it looks like, just as it was last year, anybody can win it this year.
I certainly agree, maybe even more so.
Yeah.
Looking at the results for CMP, and I was standing there watching from the pits, and at one point in the first race, there were eight drivers fighting for the lead.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a huge field. It was decent. I don't know, maybe, I can't remember the exact number, maybe 14 cars, but going into Mid-Ohio, I think we have 28 on the entry list.
Yeah, it's huge, and that's, you know, between the championship series and the vintage series. So it's going to be a full track, and Mid-Ohio is a big track, but for you guys, it's going to be, I think, a little shorter with the differences in the two classes.
Oh, I agree. I mean, it's going to be hugely, hugely competitive. Even that first week, and I was very impressed by what I saw. Lots of drivers driving very, very well at a very high level across multiple teams. So it should make for a really good weekend. I'm hoping the same for my teammates.
I was going to say, yeah, you've got Rice Race Prep, once again, a great team under their belt this year. And yeah, they were some of the drivers that were challenging for those wins.
Yeah, it was great to watch them and actually be able to be on the radio during that first weekend at CMP. They were doing a great job getting the rips of these cars. Kyle August is a returning driver who I ran with a good bit last year. Will Holtz is the new one on the block, but very talented. He's coming into form. And it'll be exciting to see what they do. I'm not trying to get in the way this weekend, just out there to have some fun and see what we can do.
You've got Nesterson and Team Palfrey. It's Hugh this time that's in the seat. So the other one went over to England, Nicholas Di Orlando. And really, the talent this year, and like you said, I think it's a little bit more stacked up from last year, because, you know, 20 cars, and I think, you know, half the field can win this weekend.
It's very, very impressive, to say the least. You mentioned Nick Di Orlando, Hugh Esterson. We've got our drivers at Rice Race, yeah, doing a very good job. Axe Kometches from Cahill, really coming into form. Really, really strong weekend at CMP, scoring a win there. And Joey Breeza, I don't think he had the best weekend at CMP, but he was, if I can say this, he was the pace setter. Up until the races, and then things diced around a little bit, but overall there are multiple drivers across several different teams that are looking really competitive and all have a shot at winning.
Let's talk about the season so far, coming up too, with FRP. Three new tracks on the schedule. One obviously I'm personally excited about is Audubon Country Club. It's great to see the best junior formula drivers in the country come to Audubon. Also, Road America's into the schedule this year, so it's going to be fun, I think, for the championship and all the classes.
I certainly agree, as some of those tracks are new and exciting. Audubon, I haven't run that track since my Skip Barber days, but one of my favorite tracks. It's very technical, but also has about every different type of corner you can imagine, with plenty of room for good racing. And having run Road America at the runoffs last year, I can say that it makes for some excellent Formula 1600 racing.
Oh, it's so fun to watch that, you know, the 1600s, you know, basically the cars that don't have aero run and drafts, and it's thinking man's racing, as some people say it.
It really is. That's honestly one of the reasons I enjoy it the most. You get to Road to Indy, and everything has to be perfect, but more than anything, you have to have the pace to do it. And an F1600, obviously you have to have the pace to be at the front, but it takes more than that. than just that raw pace to win a race when you have five drivers battling for the lead on the last lap.
Simon Sykes joins us on Inside Open Wheel. He's running the F1600 this year, this weekend, I should say, at Mid-Ohio. By the way, I'm surprised you aren't running the number one. I mean, you're the champion. You deserve it.
That'd be cool, but the number six is what I won the championship with.
That's true.
So why not stick with that?
All right, so let's talk about this past weekend. You actually got to sit down with our friend Rob Howden in the booth, also a good friend of ours, to the show. I can picture him, but I lost his name. We'll talk about that later. But you actually did pretty good for your debut time in the booth.
I appreciate it. It was the Indy Pro 2000 race. Yeah. It was the second one of the weekend in the morning, and Rob sent me a text asking if I wanted to be his driver analyst for that race, as I was not in a car to race the USF 2000 race that weekend. So obviously I said yes. Had a great time doing it, learned a lot from him, and found out that I actually do really enjoy doing that.
Todd Lewis was the track announcer for.
I love
those guys.
They were both doing an excellent job throughout. Made my job very easy. They were able to transition seamlessly.
You know what's funny is I was out and about on Friday and decided to turn on Indy Lights qualifying. I'm like, okay, let's see. You know, because Indy Lights this year, the whole road to Indy this year. Holy cow.
It's stacked.
It is. And I'm listening. I hear Rob. I'm like, okay, so there's, you know, long pit road report. Wait a second. That's not anybody else that's on the IndyCar Radio Network. That's Todd. So I sent him a taxi afterwards. I go, I thought I stumbled upon the Canadian feed.
So. Yeah, both of them did an excellent job. It was really, really good to work with them. And it was cool to see what some of the best in the business have to offer in terms of that. And maybe I can do a little bit more of that in the future. Certainly enjoyed the time I was able to do.
And of course, you're going to be back in the car after Mid-Ohio 1600. You're going to be back at Indy again, where you made your series debut for USF 2000.
That's the plan. I think we had a underlying some of the results we had there the first time. Mm-hmm. I think we had a really strong weekend there. I think that for my first weekend in the road to Indy, to do it at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway was an awesome experience. And I learned throughout the weekend and finished with some pretty good pace. I had an unfortunate penalty for a drive-through in the middle of my last race. But up until that point, I was knocking on the door of the top five. So going back there with more experience and a really, really strong team around me, and it'll be exciting to see what the results can be.
Well, it is a triple header weekend as well. You're no stranger to those, so you have a little bit of a competitive advantage for those who are just coming up to USF 2000 who don't get a chance to run triple headers in Formula cars. So the first race on Friday morning is 15 lap, 40 minutes. Second race, 15 laps. Third race, though, is 20 laps. So a little bit varying differences there.
That will be really, really fun. I think triple headers are some of the best things in motorsports. Getting to run three times in one weekend, it's definitely the most bang for your buck, and it's always a lot of fun to do those. And especially with qualifying being so heavily, heavily important in Road to Indy, it kind of alleviates some of that pressure to go out and have most of your weekend done by the time qualifying ends, because there's only one qualifying session and three races. So the fast times will set the grid for the latter two, and it'll really, really turn it into a good race.
Well, not to mention, too, it's one of the few tracks where you have two really good braking zones in turn one and off the Holman straight as well. So it's also important in those practice sessions to get used to getting in the draft, you know, setting your car up for a good pass there. So the lack of practice, you really got to get to work right away.
You definitely do. I think that's one of the biggest cases with Road to Indy, the limited track time. You have to be able to go out there and after a 30-minute practice session, be able to perform at your best. That's one of the things that's so great about F1600 racing, is that in your development to prepare for things like this, you get a huge amount of track time with four or five practices where you can really build up your car time throughout the season before you get into these Formula cars where you only get 30 minutes to practice. So it always makes it interesting to be able to go out and have to lay it down right from the very start.
Well, back to this weekend, you get more than your practice that you get for USF 2000. Two 30-minute practice sessions on Friday, qualifying on Saturday. Then you get to the first race later on that afternoon, doubleheader race on Sunday. Obviously, it's not anything you're not used to, but some drivers that you're not used to racing with.
It's always great to race against new drivers. You get to learn some of the tendencies they have. Everyone drives a little bit differently, but I don't expect it to be any less competitive than it was last year. There are some phenomenal drivers from what I've seen so far. So it's not going to be a show up and expect for a win. I'm really going to have to work for it.
Well, Simon, good luck this weekend. I'm really excited to see what happens. I'm always excited to see what happens in F1600. How can fans follow your progress throughout this weekend and at Indy?
You can catch me on Instagram at Simon period Sykes and Twitter at Simon Sykes, and Facebook is / Simon Sykes Racing.
Simon Sykes, thanks for joining us, and trust me, we're going to have you on again. I've got plans for you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. It's always a good time.
Charlie comes back next on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
I want to come back from the Simon Sykes interview and say this. I know a lot of people are probably like, well, Jeremy's really pissed off at Hinch. I'm not pissed. I'm more disappointed because he could have handled himself a lot better following the incident. Charlie, we had a chance to take a look at it in the commercial break, and you said something that really kind of opened my eyes to the whole thing.
I guess what I said was that if that's not a legitimate pass, an IndyCar would be very boring.
You mean be like Formula One?
Formula One, you would. I mean, well, here's the thing: in Formula One, you need DRS to make a move like that.
Right, exactly. And then you'd have Kimi Raikkonen, you know, saying a couple cuss words and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, but that's why we love Formula One.
Oh yeah, exactly. I'm not mad at Hinch. I'm just very disappointed the way he acted after the race, because that was a fantastic pass on that Takuma Sato made on him. It really was.
Yeah.
All right. So on to some news and notes. We're doing this later because we're just playing around with this year. So in the road to Indy, Kyle Kirkwood took his first Indy Lights win in race number 2. And I'm going backwards because here's what's interesting, Charlie. Kyle Kirkwood has a win percentage of 66.7% throughout the whole ladder system. That's impressive.
Hmm. So, yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so he won race number 2. Race number 1 went to David Malukas, his second win of the season. Malukas walks away with the points championship, as we heard earlier. Indy Pro 2000, Braden Eaves won race 1 with Christian Rasmussen, last year's USF 2000 champion, winning his first Indy Pro 2000 race at St. Petersburg. In the USF 2000, Christian Brooks once again showed why he will be a contender and a force to be reckoned with in the USF 2000 with exclusive Autosport 1-2. That was a yellow fest, which kind of resembled another series we follow. Christian Brooks actually.
Well, if it also does it resemble a series that perhaps a lot of those drivers came straight out of?
Or race in the same series as well, yes, which we are hearing some things about the Road America Indy weekend, which we'll detail late next week, but it's going to be a little hectic for a lot of those drivers, crew members who are doing double duty between Indianapolis and Road America for the Road to Indy and the F4 FRA championships.
I wonder if the F4 budget leaves any room for a private charter jet.
I mean, you could probably get some cheap flights between Indianapolis and Milwaukee Airport. It's just a matter of what's going to be cheaper, a charter jet or a rental car.
I think a rental car might be cheaper.
I'll
have to check Travelocity.
I was going to say, you're the one who says that rental cars are cheaper in New York City where you're at, whereas I can't touch a rental car for Indy GP weekend for less than $150 for 2 days.
Yeah, that's weird because usually when I rent a car to leave the city, I usually rent from like a place just outside the city.
Mm-hmm.
For 2 reasons. 1, because I don't want to have to deal with city traffic, and 2, because it's cheaper.
Right.
Like for renting a car for a day in the city 2 years ago, it would have been like $300 something. And for something like, you know, just outside the city in New Jersey, it would be like maybe a little over $100 a day, even less than that. But 2 weeks ago, I drove back to Pittsburgh to see my parents, and I rented a car from Manhattan, and it was $90 a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, I'm happy with $35. I'm assuming that it was probably a little puddle jumper.
Well, that's the thing, is that I booked an economy car, but I think really what they do is they just give me whatever they have in their inventory.
Yeah.
So it was like a Nissan SUV with like Apple CarPlay and the works.
Huh. By the way, I've got to say, I love Apple CarPlay. We had it in our car when we went down to Florida in January a couple years ago. That is fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
Oh,
it is awesome. Yeah.
I want to get a radio that has Apple CarPlay. I think that's going to be my next car. But anyway, Christian Brooks sweeps the USF 2000 races in St. Petersburg. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can really move up throughout the season. I think that USF 2000, though, is going to be a little more competitive than we saw with Christian Brooks dominating. And also with the Indy Pro 2000 Championship, Christian Rasmussen, let's just put it this way. He flat out dominated that second race, won by almost 8 seconds. 8 seconds. By the way, this is also the first win for Jay Howard Driver Development in the Indy Pro 2000 Championship. I believe it's also their first season in that championship as well. So I don't think we're going to see that. That, I think, should be the biggest win of the year, really, unless, you know, something freaky happens, like a monsoon or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but no, it was a great, outside of those dominating wins and all that, it was a fantastic weekend full of racing. By the way, as you heard earlier, Simon Sykes made his debut in the booth with our friend Rob Howden and another friend of the show, Todd Lewis, not Todd Lewis. So that was very good to see. I got to get down to St. Petersburg. I really do.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite. It's my favorite race of the year, I guess. Definitely to go to. Because like I said, it's perfect for me because it's mm-hmm. what? Early March. Yeah. So it's like the end of winter. I'm getting tired of it. I want some yep. sunshine and some warmth. And so I go down to Florida and watch a race. Like, what could be better than that?
And it is Todd Lewis. I was thinking of Todd Harris. I don't know why Todd Harris popped in my mind. Anyway, a couple of things that I found interesting from St. Petersburg. Again, a lot of the stuff is brought to us by Trackside Online, the official content provider of Inside Open Wheel. Alex Palou, really quick, once again, he took he was in the top five and two out of the three different trap speeds laps. Alex Plode clocked the fastest lap of the race with a 61.458. He also had the fastest trap speed in between turn 9 and 10, fourth fast, I should say, at 158.994. Sebastian Bourdais taking that trap speed of the 161.091. Here's an interesting note as well. For those who say Jimmy Johnson should not be in IndyCars, he took the sixth fastest trap speed between turns 9 and 10.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. I mean, you know, if you thought Jimmy Johnson was going to come in and set the world on fire in IndyCar, I've got some oceanfront property to sell you in Arizona because it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were expecting that.
Yeah, but
At least to be mid-pack. I must admit, I was expecting him to be like back of the mid-pack.
Nah, I always expected him to be in the back of the pack until he got, you know, his feet wet. At least his next race is a track that he's very familiar with. He's done a couple of tests at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on the road course, and we've seen that he, you know, thankfully because he decided to put on Strava, we've seen that he's capable of running fast there. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can. I think this is going to be the first weekend we see him at the middle of the pack.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, that's true. Because did he test at Barber ever?
He did. I don't remember if he yes, he did test at Barber and IndyCar. He also did a majority of his junior formula testing in the VRD FR America's car that Hunter Yaney runs. He did a majority of that testing at Barber Motorsports Park as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
I wonder why he didn't do it in the Indy Lights car.
I think that they had a moratorium on testing because we didn't see that, you know, Indy Lights drivers test until March.
Yeah, I suppose that would make sense.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it's not like they couldn't put them in an old Firestone Indy Lights car, but you'd still have to get like the Cooper tires and all that. And I think him
that would be awesome. Do I have like one of the 90s Indy Lights cars? That'll get you ready. That'll put some hair on your chest.
Oh, and then, you know, later that afternoon, oh, by the way, we're putting you in a champ car.
Yeah, why not?
Full boost. Have fun. You've won 7 Cup championships. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Exactly.
So I want to talk about the elephant in the room. After the race on Sunday, the calls for Colton Herta to... Why Colton Herta isn't in F1 grew louder and louder. Let me say this. Let's not shoe another great American talent into the ranks of Formula One just to get chewed up and spit out. I'm totally okay with him going and running against the likes of Joseph Newgarden, challenging Scott Dixon for his titles and being at the front of the IndyCar paddock. Because here's the thing. In my opinion, Formula One ain't what it was 10, 15 years ago. Okay? If you're not part of Mercedes or Red Bull, you're not running. You're not winning races.
I mean, Formula One has always had its dynasties. I mean,
right.
for half a decade in the early 2000s, it seemed like Ferrari was the only team that would ever win a race again. And so it seems like that way with Mercedes right now. And,
right.
You know, when they shake up the rules next year, things are going to be a little bit different and dynasties fall and teams rise. So, you know, I mean, things aren't like people always say, oh, it was better way back then. But no, things are pretty much the same now as they've always ever been.
And here's the thing. I don't see him going. Go ahead. Sorry.
But I will say that, it seems like today something that is, well, not new, but it seems like it's much more influential is that there's really only two types of people that become Formula One drivers: sons of former drivers and sons of billionaires. I'm not sure if there's anyone who doesn't fit that bill who has made it into Formula One in the last couple of years.
Well,
maybe George Russell, maybe not.
George Russell, though, he's in the Mercedes program, so you knew that he was going to get in the Formula One seat. Look at how good he was in the junior formula ranks, too.
Sure. And I mean, that's not to say that some of these drivers aren't really good. Like, Lando Norris is really, really good.
Yeah.
He's still the son of really some really wealthy people. But, you know, that's just like, I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, I don't want to see Colton Herta move F1 because, like you, I think it's great watching him here.
Yeah.
So,
and I want to see a storyline develop of having Brian on the pit stand coaching his son throughout, you know, the next couple of years. I think that that's going to be fantastic. I want to see him build up Andretti Autosport. And here's the thing, too. I want to see him coach Oliver Askew when Ryan Hunter Ray decides he's done, he's going to retire, and that seat goes to Oliver Askew.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to see the story of Colton Herta develop in the NTT IndyCar series. And this is where I wish we didn't have the split, because I think that Brian Herta would have been more of a superstar had we had just one open wheel series in the late 90s.
Yeah, I mean, so many shoulda, coulda, wouldas. I know I mentioned to you that I bought up a whole bunch of those old auto course yearbooks.
Yeah.
I think if I look over my shoulder, I have 92, 94, 95, 96, 97, 98, 99 is in the mail, 2000, 2001, 2002, and 2004. So I've been looking through those a lot, and I've been focusing on the 1998 season. So I'll read like the race recap, and then I'll go watch the race on YouTube. So I'm getting really into, I've gotten kart fever recently.
You know, I see a lot of these vloggers nowadays. They go into, oh, we're going to watch this race. We're going to watch that race. I think you and I need to sit down, watch a race, and go over it like we do the normal races.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, once I'm finished with the 1998 season, I'm going to go back to 92 and do the same thing, and then I'm just going to go through it the whole time. So if you want to do something with that.
I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because we're working on a lot of different things here on Inside Open Wheel to kind of bring you a little bit closer to the action and, you know, have a little bit of fun with it, because it's not just about us. It's about you, too. And I think, as I hit my microphone, I think that that would be a fantastic way of, you know, really showing this, you know, building the series. I know that there's going to be a lot of new listeners here, and really share with your friends, you know, hit that subscribe button. And, you know, let us know what you want to hear, too. So, but I think that 92 season, that's going to be fun. I should find one of those AutoCourse books on eBay.
Yep. And so that tangent aside, I think one of the things that's apparent, just even just from reading the books without watching the races, is just how sort of cart kind of just atrophied and just withered and died. Because, yeah, like, even with the 1998 season that I'm watching, like, the crowds are huge. The energy is, like, there's an immense amount of energy in these races. You know, the cars are awesome. They were always awesome. But there's, like, several different types of cars, several different engines, two tire manufacturers, like, brand name sponsors that people recognize. And then by the end of it, it's just, like, it's one car, it's one engine, it's, you know, a bunch of, like, some good drivers that are very familiar now, but also it's just kind of just meh.
Yeah,
a bunch of teams that are really like eh.
But the good news is the sponsors are coming back.
Yeah, they are. And you know what's the, you know how I love pulling up that trivia of like, oh well, the Freedom 100 pole time was this, and what time would this have gotten, you know, going backwards in IndyCar for the 500. I think it's an interesting question to kind of look at the same with kart and current IndyCar, and sort of like, so the split ended in 2008. We are 11, 12 years after that, 13. Mm-hmm. I can't do math. So how far have we come if you're in terms of the reverse of the split, if that makes any sense?
Makes sense. Okay. So where are we? Okay. So, let's do it this way. I'm going to go 2008 St. Petersburg Grand Prix grid, and we're going to compare the two grids, actually.
Okay.
Okay. Give me a second.
So, like, but more than just, like, car counter, just sort of the feel and the energy around the series. Like, financially, sort of fan-wise, business-wise, overall health.
I think we're in a better position than we were back in 2008. Period.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. That's not really debatable.
Yeah.
I think the question is how far. So if like for example, like this, if 2009 was 2007, where going backwards from 2007, where would we be now? Seeing as if 1995 was where we're trying to get to. Like, we're trying to get back to where we were in 1995, right? Where the series was huge, drivers were superstars, like, sponsors were flooding into the paddock, and money was coming in. That's where we're trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And we're somewhere between the death of Champ Car and 1995. So where are we?
I would say we're close to, I would say, late 80s at this point. If you think about it, because that was the period where you had drivers like Danny Sullivan, Rick Mears, you know, drivers like that starting to become household names. Okay. Granted, NASCAR at that point was starting to grow, but we're at a point now where NASCAR is starting to recede, and you've got IndyCar starting to grow. News is that Roger Penske is looking to ask for more money out of any TV provider that comes, whether it's NBC, ABC, ESPN, yes, they could come back, Fox, or CBS. So I think
as long as Scott Goodyear doesn't come back with them.
You know what? Here's the thing. I think Scott Goodyear makes a damn good race director. What he has done for F4 and FR Americas is fantastic. Period. By the way,
sure, I mean,
go ahead, sorry.
I mean, yeah, the guy can be a great race director and a terrible commentator.
Just like
Brian Barnhart could be a terrible chief steward and a great TV producer. Like race director, producer.
Yeah. All right. So by the way, the pole winning time in 2008 was 1:02.5 by Tony Kanaan, and the pole winning time by Colton Herta was a 1:03.21 by Colton Herta. So that's where we are time wise, at least.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure if you entirely understood trying to say, but that's okay.
I think I know where you're going at though. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, am I wrong in saying we're at the late 80s of IndyCar right now, where it's growing in popularity?
Well, yes, because I capped it at 1995, so you can't go farther back than that.
Okay.
But I think to the point that you're making, I don't think that any drivers really are household names. I think that's kind of one of the legacies of the split, is that, you know, outside of racing fans and, you know, IndyCar fans, obviously, but racing fans in general, outside of that, I don't think that the larger, you know, cultural body in America, I don't think that they're aware of people like Colton Herta or Scott Dixon or Ryan Hunter Ray. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. I mean, it doesn't matter. Here's the thing. You got Honda going out and putting out commercials. Remember about three or four years ago where they would put, you know, James Hinchcliffe out on national commercials. I remember watching, I forgot what we were watching, but it was on a non-IndyCar race time. And all of a sudden, here comes James Hinchcliffe on my television. That was great. I wish that they would do more of that.
And I think that, you know, things I'm sure the sports scene is a lot different in Canada. I assume that IndyCar racing is more popular there. So things could be a little bit different with that. I'm much more familiar with the American landscape, so
right,
and that may factor in for some of the difference there.
Yeah, so it's just going to be a lot of promotion here in the next couple of years. Coming up next week on Inside Open Wheel, we've got a wrap up of the FRP races at Mid Ohio Sports Car Course. We wrap up the Texas Two Step at the Texas Motor Speedway. Oh, and Charlie, it's our favorite month of the year here in the United States. It's May.
Oh, boy.
Time to start looking towards the Indianapolis 500. So for Mike Marini, Simon Sykes, our driver, analyst Charlie Ante, I'm Jeremy Scott. We thank you for listening to Inside Open Wheel. Inside Open Wheel is a production of Track Out Multimedia.